Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 97 in the series entitled The Demon of Money, The Revolutionary Power of Charity. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 4th of Nisan, 5760.
Pretty brief about it here. To use the terminology that he used in chapter 23, where he discussed this distinction, we can perhaps add a little bit of clarification and explanation. There's two levels of intimacy. There's the intimacy through mitzvah, and there's the intimacy through Torah. There's the intimacy the body experiences with the soul, but it's still the body, it's still an organ. And then there's becoming one with the soul, and that's the mind. Practically, when I do a mitzvah, I'm implementing, I'm executing Hashem's will. Hashem wants that a Jew should put on tefillin. When I am putting on tefillin, I am implementing His will. The tefillin is not His will. The putting it on is not His will. His will is that a Jew should put on tefillin, and I implement the mitzvah when I put on the tefillin. In Torah, I'm ingesting and digesting in my intellectual mind His wisdom. I am understanding that He wants I should put on tefillin. In other words, in mitzvahs, there is some level of I. There is some level of I. There is an implementer. In Torah, what are you connecting with? You're internalizing the wisdom itself. You're internalizing in your mind His very wisdom. And that means, as we discussed in chapter 23, that in mitzvahs there's already some level of opaqueness. Some tiny, relative to the world, it's total revelation. But relative to the Torah, it's some level of opaqueness that lends for the existence of an implementer of the mitzvah. And thus the revelation is not so intense. It's like the organ of a body in relationship to the soul. It's subdued to the soul. It's connected to the soul. It feels the soul. It experiences the soul. But it's not the soul. And then there is the mind and its relationship to the soul. And that's Torah. In Torah, there's no opaqueness whatsoever. There is no recipient. When I'm learning Torah, I am learning the wisdom itself. There's nothing outside of the wisdom. And that demonstrates that the revelation there is also so much more profound. And therefore there's no concealment and there's no eye outside of the wisdom. In mitzvahs there's some level of distinction on the person's part. I am not the will. I am doing the will. And that means that also Hashem is not totally present there. Because if it would be totally present there, there can't be any level of I. In Torah, I internalize, my mind becomes permeated, suffused with the wisdom itself. I'm not implementing the wisdom. I connect with the wisdom. The wisdom becomes my identity. My thought process is the wisdom. There's no level of I, and that means on his level, he's totally present there, totally a revealed way. The soul is the mind, it's not just expressed in the mind. The 36th and 37th chapter of Tanya, I think the two, perhaps the two most fundamental chapters of the Tanya, are dedicated to one of the favorite topics of Chassidus, Mashiach. In these chapters, the Alter Rebbe explained the process of history from the Kabbalistic and Hasidic point of view, and how history leads to its ultimate raison d'etre, its purpose, with the coming of Mashiach and the ultimate redemption. The point being that through every single mitzvah, every single prayer, every word or paragraph in Torah that's studied throughout all of the generations, the physical universe becomes more translucent and more transparent. Every kazayis of matzah that has ever been consumed, every coin or dollar that was given for charity, every Shabbos candle that was kindled, every pair of tefillin that was put on through any Jew throughout the last thousands of years, created another revolution, contributed another brick in the divine structure in making from this world a dira, a home, a structure, an abode for Hashem. Throughout the generations, every Jew, man, woman, and child, received their part in the universe. The world is divided into 360 billion parts, corresponding to the 360 billion souls, sparks. Each soul is interconnected with one segment of the world in which the soul is responsible and privileged to create a spiritual revolution, a transcendental rebellion. A rebellion against the opaqueness of the world. That's what it's all about, to create a celestial divine mutiny against the density of the world and allow the universe to express the harmony, the goodness, the unity, and the perfection inherent in it due to its creator. The direct summation of this whole process is Mashiach, when the curtains will be opened and suddenly everything that humanity has created previously will be revealed in a very conspicuous and concrete way in our world. The oldest student of the Maggid was Reb Mendel Haradoker, and after the passing of the Maggid, the Alter Rebbe accepted him as his Rebbe and his spiritual mentor. Reb Mendel of Haradoker made an aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, to the Holy Land, in the year Tav Kuf Lamed Zayin, which would be 1777, together with Reb Avraham of Kalisk and a whole group of Chassidim to the Holy Land. The Alter Rebbe parenthetically also wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael with them, but Reb Mendel refused to allow him to accompany them on the journey, so the Alter Rebbe stayed behind in Russia. Reb Mendel lived in Tveria, in Tiberias. One day, a Jew who was, as they say, a meshuganer, he was somewhat abnormal, an imbecile, went up to the Mountain of Olives, to the Har HaZeisim, with a huge shofar. And he began blowing the shofar. So the people in Yerushalayim heard someone on the Mount of Olives blowing the shofar. This is one of the prophecies connected to the Messianic era. So rumor had it that Eliyahu HaNavi is around, roaming on the Har HaZeisim, blowing the shofar, heralding, announcing the imminent arrival and revelation of Mashiach. The rumor spread like fire from city to city, from town to town in the whole Holy Land. Har HaZeisim is being consumed by the sound of shofar of Eliyahu HaNavi. Rumor arrived to Reb Mendel HaRadaka's home. One of his Hasidim, his students, came running in, and the Rebbe, Mashiach came. Reb Mendel said, "What happened? How do you know?" He said, "There's a yid on the Har HaZeisim with a huge shofar blowing and blowing away." Reb Mendel was sitting on his chair learning. He stood up from his chair. He went over to his window. He opened the window, he stretched his head out, and he sniffed. He sniffed the air. And sadly, with melancholy, he turned to the yid. He said, "No. Unfortunately, Mashiach has not arrived yet." What's the meaning behind the story? Why did he have to sniff the air outside of his window? So Chassidim explained, because Reb Mendel's own home, the Mashiach energy was always existing. So he could not tell. He opened up the window. He stretched his head outside of his ambiance, of his oasis. And he said, "Unfortunately, Mashiach did not come." So the energy of Mashiach is created here and now, through every single mitzvah that was ever done, as explained at length last week. Redefined the world and penetrated the shell, rebelled against the opaqueness, and probed its divine essence. And in a case like Reb Mendel or Haradaker, this was conspicuously felt in his ambiance. His home was transparent. However, when he stretched out his head, he saw that he smelled the atmosphere, the air of the whole world. He said, "Mashiach has not come." And this is the point Alter Rebbe made, the powerful point, that essentially after thousands of years, you can put it this way, there is gasoline spread all over this universe, every nook and cranny and corner of this universe, there is gasoline. So you just need one spark, the spark of Mashiach, to ignite the gasoline, and momentarily the world will be consumed with a divine transcendental fire. Mashiach doesn't have to create the fire, it's just the spark that ignites the pre-existing gasoline that exists and is accelerated through every single mitzvah and every single spiritual act. Now we'll continue inside. In the middle of Perek Lamed Zayin, we are on Chapter 37, Daf Mem Ches Amud Beis, which is page 96. In the middle of the page, at the words Ubazeh Yuvan. Ubazeh Yuvan, in light of the above, we can understand why our sages so greatly extolled the virtue of charity. And as he puts it, they didn't just praise it and highlight it. They extolled it in a very powerful way again and again. When they said, Sichta Baba Basud of Tasamid Aleph, Sheshkula keneged kol mitzvahs, that tzedakah is equal to all the other mitzvahs together. And furthermore, b'chol Talmud Yerushalmi nikras b'shem mitzvah stam, in all of Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, tzedakah is called simply the mitzvah, the commandment. For example, in Yerushalmi at the conclusion of Masechta Peah, the Yerushalmi tells the story about Reb Chanina, who used to be maflig mitzvah b'leila. He used to distribute a mitzvah by night. What does it mean? He would distribute tzedakah by night. In Yerushalmi, the word tzedakah is synonymous with the word mitzvah. So you say he would distribute the mitzvah by night. That is the mitzvah. The Yerushalmi would tell the story that Reb Chanina would distribute tzedakah by night, and one night, Paga Bei Rabba in the Ruchi, the chief agent and minister of the Shadim, of the spiritual demons, encountered him, and he said, Reb Chanina, don't you remember the pasuk lo sasig vul reyecha? You're not allowed to infringe on the territory of your friend. And Laila's Gvul Ruchis Rashadim, the night is our domain, it belongs to us. What are you doing in my territory? So Reb Chanina responds, didn't you forget the pasuk? Did you not forget the pasuk in Mishlei Chafalef, Matan Beseiser, Yichpe Off, that an anonymous gift will cover the anger of the receiver of the gift, him not knowing who is the one who is aware of his poverty and so forth. And the Gemara says that the demon escaped from him and allowed them to deal with the night territory. But in any case, tzedakah in Yerushalmi, tzedakah is defined as mitzvah. When you say mitzvah, it means tzedakah. And the reason is, kikacha yahergel aloshen likrei tzedakah v'shem mitzvah stam. For such was the idiomatic expression commonly used to refer to tzedakah, the mitzvah. And here the question is why tzedakah is important, powerful, significant. But are you going to say that this is the prototype, this is the cardinal, essential mitzvah, that when you say the word mitzvah, it means a charity? There are many myriads of mitzvahs in the Torah that are not connected to tzedakah. So the Alter Rebbe explained that in light of the above, we will understand this. Mipnei she'ikir ha-mitzvahs ma'isi is because indeed tzedakah constitutes the core of all of the mitzvahs of action, va'oilal kolana, and surpasses them all. Why? She'kulon he'rak la'halis nefesh ha'chiyunis la'shem. For ultimately the purpose of all these mitzvahs is only to elevate one's biological soul to Hashem. Shehi hi amikayemes oisonu mislabeshes ben. Since it is she, the biological soul, that performs the mitzvahs and clothes itself in them. Likal el ba'ed ein sof baruch hu amulu bushbehem. So as to be absorbed into the ein sof energy, clothed in the mitzvahs. The Ein Sof energy, divine intimacy, is conspicuously expressed in mitzvahs, because every mitzvah, the performance of a mitzvah, constitutes the fulfillment of the divine will and the divine inner intimate will. When my biological soul engages in a mitzvah, and every physical deed has to come about through my biological soul, so my biological animal soul becomes absorbed in the divine energy, in the Ein Sof. Ve'ein lecha mitzvah she'nefesh achiyunis mislabeshes b'kol kach ki b'mitzvahs hatzdaka. Now you will find no other mitzvah in which the biological soul is clothed to the same extent as in the mitzvah of tzedakah. Why? Shebechol ha-mitzvahs, for in all other mitzvahs, ein mislabish beherna kayach echad minefesh achiyunas. Only one faculty of the biological soul is manifested, is clothed in them. For example, my power of action, of movement, when I put on tefillin or when I shake an esrog. My power of eating, Shabbos or Yom Tov, my power of in my meals of Shabbos and Yom Tov, my power of chewing, in eating matzah, marah, and so forth. And furthermore, even this one faculty of the biological soul is enclosed in the mitzvah, b'shas ma'isa ha-mitzvah levat, only while the mitzvah is being performed, not previously and not afterwards. Then this very same faculty engages and performs other elements of life. aval b'tzedaka. However, in the case of charity, sha'odam naisin miyagia kapaf, which one gives from the proceeds of the toil of his hands, hare kol koyach nafshei achiyunis melubosh ba'asiyas melachtoi, all the strength of his biological vital soul is clothed and applied to the effort of his labor, or in any other occupation by which he earned this money. The charity that you're giving is not just the dollar, the $50, the $100, the $1,000 you're giving to tzedakah. This money you earned as a result of your work, as a result of your labor. Which element of your biological soul was engaged in this labor that allowed you to have this money that you're giving for charity? Your arms and your legs and your limbs for your work, for your daily labor, which allows you to have an income. You do things with your arms and with your legs and with all of your other limbs. Thus, when he gives to charity this money that his entire biological soul produced through continuous labor and effort, so his entire vital soul ascends to Hashem. The money that a human being owns, the Alter Rebbe is saying, is not just individual physical properties. It's a summation of your entire biological soul. Because my entire soul, my entire vital soul is involved in the work, in the labor, in the business that produced this money. So when I take this money and I give it away for tzedakah, which means this money becomes an object through which the intimate will of Hashem is implemented, I didn't only use one faculty of the biological soul at a given moment. Rather, its totality, the totality of its physical power, is now transformed, is now redefined. And not only at this moment that I'm giving to a poor man a piece of charity, rather all the moments of my work and my labor that constituted many, many moments and hours and days and weeks and months and so forth, all of it is now redefined from an opaque shell. The transcendental rebellion has been achieved in the most powerful way, where it's now redefined as an instrument, as an expression of godliness. In another section of Tanya, in Igeres HaKodesh, in chapter 4, the Alter Rebbe puts it in somewhat other terms. He says that a person's heart is where his money is. Where your money is, that's where your heart is. He says, as we see usually in the cases of most people involved in business and work. So when I give tzedakah, I redeem the whole heart, that whole passion, that whole soul that was in this money, and I give it to godliness. And I give it away to Hashem. I redefine it as godly. And now, the Alter Rebbe comes to your question, v'gami sheinei nena miyigia, even one who does not earn his livelihood from his labors. So his money is not a tamtzis, is not a summation, does not encapsulate his biological soul, because his soul didn't work to produce this money. It's a physical property. Mikoma came nevertheless. Since he could have purchased with this money that he gave for charity, he could have purchased sustenance for the life of his vital soul. So he is actually giving away his soul's life to Hashem. Even if he didn't work for the money. True. So the previous idea does not apply to this human being. But since with even this prutta, this one coin, or this sum of money, he could have bought chayei nafshei, something that would have given his life, his soul, life and animation and vitality. And here, he's letting go of that money. Why? In order to fulfill Hashem's will. So he's taking his actual soul and giving it away to Hashem. There was once a very wealthy Jewish miser who lived in a community and refused to give a penny for charity. And finally, the leaders of the community could not bear and tolerate him anymore. They knocked on his door one day. They said, listen, Rabbis, if you don't start contributing to tzedakah for the so many needy people and institutions in our town, you're excommunicated. We won't give you an aliyah anymore. We won't allow you to have a place in the shul. We will not talk to you. You will be totally excommunicated from this community. So the Yid, without skipping a heartbeat, tells them, I don't understand you guys. Do you know that I have a terribly, miserably, poverty-stricken poor brother who has 8 daughters, doesn't have a penny to his name, and is in constant need of support? So they say, interesting. And where does he live? He lives in Brod. Okay, they backed off. He's not so stingy. But, nevertheless, they decided to inquire. And they sent a letter to the brother, and the brother responds. He says, my brother, for years he never gave me a single ruble. I'm begging him to help me. He never gave me a cent. What is he lying to you that he supports me? So they come back to this wealthy miser. They say, you're deceiving us? Such a chutzpah? He says, you didn't understand what I meant. I told you I have a brother who's very poor. So the message I was trying to communicate you was a kal v'chaymer. Madoch, my own brother, who's part of my blood and my family, I won't give a cent to, and he really needs it. So you want, I should give you money. There's something, even as I was preparing this today, I thought of something even more characteristic of, also very characteristic of human nature. Sometimes it's easy or easier for people to talk about very personal issues, even extremely intimate issues that relate to very profound elements of our personality, our emotions, and our life, easier than to talk about how much money we own. There's people who have close friends and they can reveal to those friends their deepest complexities and darkest secrets, but not how much money they have in their bank account and in their savings account and so forth. There are people that are in therapy for 10 years and the psychiatrist or psychologist knows every detail of their life, every machshav azara that they have, every alien craving they have, but he does not know how much money they have in their account. But the point being, whatever the reason may be, we're not going to go around the table now and ask everyone to discuss how much money they own, even though that might not be so unhealthy. But to bring out the hold that money has over our soul. Money has an extremely powerful hold on people. And in a way, the Alter Rebbe is telling us here that he sees money as a mirror of my entire animal soul. Your money is a mirror of your soul, of your animal soul, of your materialistic soul. So when I take this money and I give it for tzedakah, so I took my soul, I took the opaque materialistic element of me, and I made it God. Very good question. Very good question. You're asking, why is tzedakah so unique? Every mitzvah that costs money should be included in this category. To buy matzah these days is an expensive expense. To buy a nice asterisk is an expense. I'm taking my money that I earned, or at least with which I can buy chayei nafshei, and I'm giving it away for a mitzvah. But the answer is, in a way, you are right. But the geder of buying an esrog, the geder of the mitzvah of shaking an esrog, is not giving away your money. If someone gives you a beautiful esrog as a present, you perform the mitzvah in a perfectly fine way. The definition of the mitzvah is not using your money. It just happens to be that you don't have a best friend who's an esrogim seller or a matzah baker, and thus you have to pay for it. But the definition of the mitzvah is not using money. The definition of the mitzvah is shaking an esrog. And shaking an esrog means shaking an esrog, period. The definition of tzedakah is taking your money and giving it away to a poor man.
Yeah, you know something? I
This is the reason why tzedakah is equal to all the mitzvahs together, and Yerushalmi is defined as mitzvah, because the primary element of a mitzvah discussed at length in this chapter and in earlier chapters is expressed particularly and in a more powerful way in tzedakah. This is the reason why our sages have said shemekarevus is hagol, that tzedakah particularly hastens the redemption of Mashiach, as the Gemara says in Masechta Baba Basra Daf Yud Amud Aleph. So the Marsham Baba Basra explains the reason for this, because the tzedakah that we give creates a schus, a merit for us that Hashem should reciprocate and do charity with us in a revealed way. As the Marsham puts, during the time of exile, Hashem's tzedakah that he does with us is concealed. So our giving tzedakah to people in need is the receptacle, so to speak, that Hashem in return will do tzedakah with us in a revealed way, and that is what the coming of Mashiach is all about. But that, according to that, is obviously no connection between tzedakah and the redemption. It's two distinct elements. It's just since we're doing tzedakah, so Hashem responds in kind and also does tzedakah. But here the Alter Rebbe presents the explanation in this according to Chassidus, in light of what has been explained above, what is Mashiach and what is the redemption, we'll understand this. For with one act of charity, one elevates a great deal of the biological soul. More of its faculties and powers, in fact, than he might elevate through many other active mitzvahs combined. If he would have done many mitzvahs, he would have indeed elevated many components of the biological soul. But it cannot compare to what the Jew achieves through one act of tzedakah. By taking this money and giving it to a poor man, it's not just that the physical money transcended its earthly parameters and became what it is in essence, a celebration of godliness. It's not just my power of giving at that moment transcended its earthly parameters and became what it truly is, a celebration and expression of godliness. But rather, everything, like we explained, that was invested in the money has now been redefined and has become a celebration of godliness. And what is Mashiach? That the world becomes godly. That the world transcends its ego and becomes a conduit for godliness, which all begins in the human being, as discussed previously in the chapter, when we transform our own biological soul. And there's no mitzvah through which you transform your biological soul like in tzedakah. And therefore tzedakah in particular hastens the coming of the revelation of Mashiach. Yes. Shamru Razal Shetalmud Torah Keneged Kulam. As for the statement of our sages in the beginning of Masechta Peah, and we say it every morning, that Torah study outweighs all other mitzvahs. And here the Alter Rebbe asks a very important and interesting and powerful question. At this point in Tanya, we received an answer to the big question that was asked in the beginning of the 35th chapter of Tanya. What's the real purpose of the life of the Beinoni, the ordinary man who toils his entire life, engaging in combat and in constant war with his animal soul, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, and so forth, his entire life, and never really achieves anything. His whole life constitutes an ongoing battle and struggle between his transcendental soul and his materialistic, egotistical soul, and the problem is never solved. He never comes out a winner. And Alter Rebbe put it in very dramatic terms that the Beinoni is in need of comfort, in need of consolation. It's unfair for the Beinoni. He believes in Hashem. His whole life is dedicated to a spiritual ideal. But there's never real total serenity, total peace, total harmony and victory. For this, the Alter Rebbe began erecting in his unique style a very meticulous spiritual structure of ideas, beginning by explaining the fact that the dwelling, the manifestation of divinity, of godliness, of the Shekhinah in this world, can only and exclusively be achieved through mitzvahs. Not through ecstasy, not even through the deepest spiritual ecstasy. Because it's only in mitzvahs where there's no I, not even a spiritual I. In every other spiritual encounter, love, ecstasy, passion, there is an I, and the very fact that there is a level of I, albeit a transcendental I, indicates that godliness is not revealed. Because when the real thing is revealed, when there's no concealment, when there is no density, when there's no opaqueness whatsoever, there is He and there's none else besides He. In a mitzvah, there's no I. As discussed in chapter 35, the Shekhinah is thus communicated into our lives through mitzvahs. And this the Beinoni has. As mentioned, the Beinoni might not experience ecstasy with Hashem, but he experiences intimacy with Hashem. Right. Right. Now, that was step one. Step two. Since the ultimate purpose of all existence was that Hashem desired to have a dira betachtonim, which means a dwelling place in the lower realms, that the physicality of the world, the crudeness, the bruteness, that element of existence that expresses nothing, that is expressionless, that should become a home which expresses godliness. Therefore, the main purpose of existence is achieved through the physical mitzvahs, through mitzvahs maisius, mitzvahs of action, through which you transform and you redefine the physical properties of the universe. Whether it's the hide of an animal, whether it's the money that you give for tzedakah, whether it's the esrig you use on Sukkos, whether it's the unleavened bread you use on Pesach, and so forth. Mitzvahs that entail physical elements of the universe, that constitute and are connected to physical limbs of your body, and that are performed through your physical motor, through your biological soul that does physical things. Torah, learning Torah, as mentioned in 35, is much more of a spiritual experience. It's connected more to the celestial, more refined, more subtle, transcendental elements of the person. That which is less coarse and is more celestial. Torah is more connected to a divine soul experience than to an animal soul experience. Even though thought and speech is also processed through the animal soul, but here the biological soul is more a facilitator, an expressor, a channel for the spirituality of the divine soul. This, said the Alter Rebbe, affects the entire transcendental rebellion for which the whole world was created, through which Mashiach comes. And this is the contribution of the Beinoni to himself, to the world, to Hashem. Doing, even though there may not be emotions, even though there may be all types of other cravings, but the most awesome thing is La'asaisai. The Beinoni behaves day after day in the fashion consistent with the blueprint of Hashem in performing one mitzvah after another mitzvah. He creates that cosmic revolution that will produce the cosmic explosion. fragt now the Alter Rebbe, is this so simple? Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Everybody knows that all of the Svarim, all of the books of the Alter Rebbe, are pervaded with the concept that learning Torah constitutes the most powerful and profound element in the life of the Jew, based on this statement that Talmud Torah outweighs all of the other mitzvahs. I don't know if there is another spiritual giant who extols the virtue and the awesomeness that Torah study plays in the life of the Jew as the Alter Rebbe. Whether it's in Hilchas Talmud Torah of Shulchan Aruch, whether it's in all of the Hasidic discourses. It's indescribable, the kirvas hanefesh, the close intimacy, how the Alter Rebbe melts away, so to speak, when he talks about this, about Torah study in the life of a Jew. In Tanya, which is his most seminal work, and was written briefly, two complete chapters, 5 and 23, are devoted exclusively to explaining in a very elaborate form the uniqueness of Torah study in the life of the Jew. And as the Alter Rebbe explained it in chapter 5 and chapter 33, as we discussed that at length, I once heard from the Rebbe, he was talking about yeshiva bachrim who waste their time. He said, don't they realize, besides everything, that the Alter Rebbe, in the first chapter of Tanya, immediately discusses a Jew who has a moment to learn Torah, and instead he squanders that moment and does something else. And the Rebbe said, and where did the Alter Rebbe place that idea in the first chapter of Tanya? And we're in the first chapter on the first side, on the first page. And we're on the first page of Tanya. He said, on the last line, which Hakel Hailech Acher Achitum. Everything the Gemara says in Brachas Yudbeis follows its culminating point. The last line of the first page of the first chapter of Tanya. So here is the big question. Some people misunderstand this line in Tanya. They think the Alter Rebbe is asking, how can we say Tzedakah outweighs all the mitzvahs? Talmud Torah keneged kolam. That's not a question. It also says that Shabbos is shkula keneged kolam mitzvahs. It also says that Tzitzis is shkula keneged kolam mitzvahs. And many other mitzvahs. And the answer is, various mitzvahs contribute their unique element that other mitzvahs doesn't have. And in this sense, Shabbos is unique, and Tzedakah is unique, and Tzitzis is unique, and Talmud Torah is unique. This question is not just a continuation to the lines earlier about Tzedakah. This question is a general cosmic question that now occupies the soul of the Alter Rebbe. How is this consistent with the idea that has been stressed now during the last three chapters, 35, 36, 37, that the ultimate purpose, objective and goal of existence is transforming physicality of the universe, my own physicality, and the physicality of the world, which is primarily achieved, primarily through mitzvahs maisius. Zogdal Tereba. Hainu, this is Mipnei Shetalmud Torah Bediburu Machshava. Because study of Torah employs speech and thought, Shem levushim hapnimim shel nefesh achiyunis, which constitute the inner garments of the vital soul, unlike action, which is external.